Okay, thank you very much and good afternoon. I'm going to change, we're going to change pace a little bit from microbial community to something quite different, looking at the distribution of Enterococcus species in an urban watershed. I think all of you are so filled up from looking at the parasequencing and everything this morning. So let's change a little bit, relax, and get into a different state of mind. We're going to look at a typical watershed in Southern California, which is here in the San Bernardino, LA County, Orange County, and Riverside County. This watershed here that we'll be looking at has a very high concentration of dairy cow. They used to have the highest concentration of cattle in the U.S. until some of them moved up to the Central Valley, to San Joaquin Valley, and some of them moved to Idaho, and some of them moved maybe to Texas. So who knows where they are. But we still have a lot of livestock in the watershed. And as you see the title of my talk, we're talking about Santa Ana River watershed. What happens here is that the Santa Ana River, it comes all the way down here to the Huntington Beach and to Newport Beach, all the way from this area here, passing through all this area where we have a lot of livestock, and runs down to the Pacific Ocean. And sometimes we have a lot of problems here in the right here near Huntington Beach and Newport Beach, where you have a lot of problems with the beach closures. And there have been a lot of speculations of so many things going on in this area, and some of these things coming out here from the inland area. But what we did in our study was to look at two basic channels, the Chino Creek Channel and the Cypress Channel. Chino Creek is mainly urban runoff, mainly from residential areas. And the Cypress Channel is from agricultural runoff. Then it comes to this area. This is Prado Park, Prado Lake area, where you have a lot of recreational activities, biking, boating, and all fishing, basically non-contact sports. And you go up here, we have a control area here where there is absolutely nothing. The water that flows here is from the melting ice. I have a lot of things that I have here that I need to speed up so that we can go through some of the basic statistics that are some of the basic data that we're going to have. So why do we study Enterococcus species? This is, you can see that this is a very big study in a relatively large watershed. So what we've done is that we've done a lot of other things in this watershed, but we're talking about Enterococci in this presentation, which is mainly because they are very ubiquitous in the environment. They are also present both in human and animal digestive tract. They have frequent multiple antibiotic resistance, and they are limitless capacity for horizontal gene transfer. And the most critical thing is that they are also very opportunistic and cause all sort of not so common pathogens to human. And in fact, I was talking to one of my daughters, a friend of my daughter. Her dad is a physician in the area where they have a lot of problems with this kind of contamination, especially with kids that go out and play football out in the some of this watershed, some of this area, and get injured and end up developing MRSA and all sort of things. So we're going to look at Enterococcus species in the environment. Basically, what we've done is that we look at different PCR multiplex PCR because we have about 2,000 isolates of enterococci that we isolated from this watershed. So we want to identify them into the species level. And what we were able to do was that in our watershed, we were able to use 16S primers and identify up to about 11 or 12 Enterococcus species. And you can see that the three main species that we had in the watershed were Ficeles, Fasium, and Enterococcus mundi. We also look for, you can see in the other group, we also look for the pair Enterococcus frevescens, gyrophos, and the other species that we didn't find. So out of what we had, you can see we had Ficeles was about 225, Fasium was about 492, and Enterococcus mundi was about 629, so 25. So these were the dominant species that we found right there in the watershed. And we had also 44 unknowns, and these 44 unknowns, we were able to go back and sequence them and found out that about 26, 27 of them were Enterococcus timidus. And we were still unable to resolve about 14 of them. And what happens with those 14 were still identified as Enterococcus species, but Enterococcus, but we didn't, we were unable to identify them up to the species level. Like I said earlier, that all these samples were taken from areas that were impacted by urban runoff. That means runoff from the residential area, agricultural runoff, control site, wastewater treatment plant, and also in the Prado Park area, which is a recreational area. From this, we did some antimicrobial activity studies looking at the resistant phenotypes of using specific antibiotics. Basically, we look at 8 antibiotics. And I put this one up here, the first one, because so that you can have a general idea of what happens here. Let me just point out that you see M stands for Fasium, or M stands for Enterococcus mundi. FM is for Enterococcus fasium, and the FS is for Enterococcus ficalis. We used about 8 antibiotics: Cipro, erythromycin, tetracycline, vancomycin, and then ampicillin, chloramphenicol, gentamicin, and penicillin. So those were the basic 4 antibiotics that we used. Then when you look at what we're going to see here is that Enterococcus ficalis, most of the time carry multiple antibiotic resistant phenotype, and throughout the entire watershed we have Enterococcus ficalis carrying multiple antibiotic phenotypes, mainly Cipro, erythromycin, and most of the time tetracycline. Ficalis also carries a little bit of multiple antibiotic resistance, but not in all the cases. So then vancomycin showed a little bit of sometimes intermediate resistance. Ampicillin, chloramphenicol, gentamicin, and penicillin did not show any significant level of resistance. They were all susceptible to the all these enterococcus were susceptible to ampicillin, chloramphenicol, gentamicin, and penicillin. I have a series of slides that is basically going to show the same thing. So that is why I'm spending a little bit of time on these two slides, because the rest of the slides that we have shows almost the same thing. This is the one that we look at. The first two slides we're looking at the surface runoff, and this one is from a soil sample from the sediment. You can see Fasium about out of 400 or almost 500 samples, about 78% of them were received sent to Cipro, and about 75% of them were received sent to tetracycline. The same thing as we have in surface water, then this is the same thing that we have here with the ampicillin. Didn't show any sort of form of resistance. What happens here is, this is from the urban run, from the agricultural runoff channels. You come in again, you see that Enterococcus faecium also carries multiple antibiotic resistance, mainly to Cipro, erythromycin, and tetracycline. Then you move up to agricultural runoff again in the sediment. You look at, it's the same thing. And tetracycline, you have Enterococcus faecium. All the isolates that we have showed about almost 100% resistant to tetracycline. So these were the patterns that what we saw from our sampling, that you see faecium consistently shows multiple antibiotic resistance to at least three antibiotics, both all the way from sediment to surface water, and even when you look at the Prado Park area, which is a recreational area, then you see the same pattern is followed when you get to the water treatment plants, where you look at it, you still see that Enterococcus faecium carries a multiple antibiotic resistant profile. So this goes on throughout in the watershed, where you notice that you have a lot of multiple antibiotic resistant profile from Enterococcus faecium. And in some cases, in very few cases, with the Enterococcus faecalis. So these were the basic pattern that we were looking at. And our interest here was mainly to try to relate some of these resistant phenotypes to maybe some sort of genetic characteristics. And in that aspect, we only have very few slides that we're going to present to show some of these genetic characteristics. We were interested in looking at the vancomycin resistant genes, and also looking at the tetracycline resistant genes. And what we were able to see here was that in most of our samples, you can see that what we had from the resistant phenotypes, most of them were susceptible to vancomycin. And when we use when we look at van C, van F, van B, and van C, none of our samples showed the resistant gene profile. But when we look at tetracycline in most of our samples, THC, most of the isolates were resistant to THC, and also most of them were resistant to THK and THO. So this was the pattern that that followed when we look at either in the water sample or in the soil samples or in the water sample. At least in the water sample, there were some resistant genes that showed up when you look at the vancomycin resistant, when you look at van C, and also in some cases when you look at the van C2. But the dominant patterns also follows when you look at THC and also THK and THO in the water samples. In conclusion, what we come up here is that the Enterococcus faecium exhibited the highest resistant phenotypes. And this also reflected in the resistant genotypes that we observe in the watershed. These resistance were mainly associated with the cipro, letromycin, and tetracycline. Resistance to tetracycline was most prevalent in agricultural sediments. So what we were trying to do here was to look at what happens from the urban runoff and from our agricultural sediment. And the only thing that we could come up that was so distinct here was that most of our resistant genes to tetracycline were mainly dominated in the agricultural, either surface runoff or in the sediment. And that's it. Any question?
What was the concentration of the tetracycline? And have you looked at if there was any tetracycline present in the water?
Yes, we look at whether there were tetracycline present in the water. I don't have that data right now, but we had tetracycline were present in the water and in the sediment, though they were in a very small concentration.
What was the practice or the management practices for tetracycline application in the dairy industry? Is it feed additive, or is it fed just for diseased animal situations?
I think it's feed additive. I don't know. Because we don't ask the farmers what kind of practice that they do, but we think that it's feed additive. Maybe somebody knows, can... Okay. That's why... Okay, that is why I was saying that I didn't know that maybe. So, what do you think it is?
It's given just on an as-need basis for antibiotics for treatment of things that are going on in the herd.
Okay.
Any questions? There's a couple minutes.
So, why is the sample flag that have the high animal resistance?
Bacterial population that we collected from the sediment had more time. There may be resident population in the sediment, and probably had a longer time to get exposed to the different levels of antibiotics for a longer period of time, and so they are just acquire the resistant genes because they have been in the sediment for a longer time compared to population in the surface water that are just moving through the surface water continuously. That is just my thinking. Okay.